1 Corinthians 9:19-21. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. In Galatians 6:2, carry each other's burdens in this way, and you will fulfill the law of Christ, the word of God for the people of God.
Good morning. I have the distinct privilege of bringing you the second message on politics in our series. This series that we're doing is called Stronger Together. We have subtitled it Issues That Divide Us. I don't know if you guys know this, but politics is a very divisive issue, not just in the church, in the world. And Kelly pointed it out this last week, two issues that you don't talk about at the water cooler, politics and religion. Church is a really hard place to not talk about religion. So this series is designed, should make you feel uncomfortable at times, and if nothing else, make you feel better out of coming through that uncomfortableness, make you better on the other side. Because the church should be a place where we can safely talk about everything. That doesn't mean that we agree with everything, but we should be able to discuss it and understand where somebody else is coming from. Now, as a Christian, one of the big things, before I get into this too much, the politics series that we're talking about, or that we're going through, is used with permission from North Point Ministries, which is Andy Stanley's church in Georgia. The question that I posed to you today, are you willing, and this could cause some tension, are you willing to put your faith filter before your political filter? Put your faith filter before your political filter. Put your faith filter before your recognition as being a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or whatever it is. Put your faith first. You're following Christ first. Are you willing to do that? Now, that doesn't mean that you exit politics altogether and that you don't get involved. In fact, it's important that we lean into what's going on in our world today, okay? Despite of how difficult it can be to, just how difficult it can be. It's important that we engage. But how we engage, that's the important part. Last week, Kelly brought in the passage that Jesus prayed before he went to the cross. He said, Father, I pray that you would make them one as we are one. The church should be unified in love. He pointed out that we should, last week, disagree politically, because we always will. There will always be disagreement in our life. We should, at the same time, love unconditionally and pray for unity. Because the reality is, if somebody came to me and said, hey, can you preach a sermon saying that the Republicans are right in their platform, that they're in sync with the teaching of Christ? Like, yes, I could do that. Or on the other side, can you come preach a sermon that says that the Democrats are, that their platform is in sync with the teaching of Christ? Like, you could do that too. Because no matter how you look at it, or when you look at it, when you interpret the words of Jesus through your political filter, it's amazing. He's so red. He's so blue. It's amazing how often he agrees with you. Like, when you use your own filter to interpret the words of Jesus, Jesus agrees with you in every point that you could ever take. And Andy Stanley, in his sermon, he talks about how once he heard Tony Evans, he's a famous speaker and teacher and pastor, says, Jesus didn't come to take sides. Jesus came to take over. And he probably said it 1,000 times better than I just did, because I am not Tony Evans. But Jesus came to introduce the kingdom of heaven on earth. He didn't come to be a part of any political party. He came to introduce a kingdom that unites us all. He came to introduce a kingdom that is upside down. The kingdom of God is a kingdom where the king lays down his life for his subjects and doesn't demand his, he doesn't come demanding his subjects to lay down his life for him. He did it first. And at some point, no matter what, the kingdom of man will always conflict in some level with the kingdoms of God. There will always be conflict between those. And this is why it's absolutely foolish, a terrible idea to be disagreeing over political issues as a church. Because the kingdom of God's up here. Everything, all the politics and everything's down here. Like, these are going to fade away. Okay? There is not a political view that you hold today that will not change in the next 15 years. Wherever you are in the spectrum, there are things that are more important than the views that you hold politically. So today I'm going to try and describe, lay out for you a template that helps us to determine, okay, so there's going to be disagreement. So where does our agreement end and where does our disagreement begin? Because there will always be disagreement. So beginning with that, the Apostle Paul gives us in two places in his letters, he uses this phrase, the law of Christ. And when trying to figure out, okay, so what is the law of Christ? The law of Christ is when he comes to his disciples at the Passover meal before he goes to the cross. He comes to them, he says, a new command I give you. In John 13, he says, a new command I give you. Love one another as I have loved you. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. Now, this is not just a love fest, you know, like, let's love one another, you know. Like, no, he doesn't say just love one another. He says, he gives you a reason or gives you a pathway. He says, love one another or as I have loved you. He tells you how to do that. I don't know if you caught the words that we just sang a few minutes ago. If you truly take that to heart, that we are to love Christ, love others as Christ loved us, that should scare you. I was singing the unconditional love of God, the unconditional, reckless love of God. That's hard. Yeah, I was not prepared to cry there, but I was crying when I was singing that. I was like, this is crazy. But it's amazing. But Jesus goes on in verse 35 and saying, if you are able to love others as I have loved you, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. It's a family thing. Love one another. It's an all skate. Everybody's in. Take your cues from me, Jesus said. So the law of Christ, to put it another way, as Anya said a little bit ago, to Jesus somebody. Jesus' law. He says in 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 21, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave. Not an uncommon thing for him to see slaves in his day. To win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like the Jew who is under the law. Though I myself am not under the law. When he talks about the law here, so he's talking about the Torah, the laws of the Jews. Is that he's a Pharisee, he's a teacher, he knew those laws inside and out, but he didn't place himself under that law anymore. So I became like one who was under that law, so to win them, though I was not under the law. And to those who not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but under Christ's law, under Jesus' law, so as to win those not having the law. And so to the Jewish reader, they might say, like, wait, you just said you're under the law, like, but you said you're not under the law? He's like, yeah, I'm not under Torah, but I am under the law of Christ to love others as Christ has loved me. So what is the law of Christ? To love others as Christ loved us. And then the second place he says it is in Galatians 6:2. He says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. In essence, you see somebody burdened financially, somebody who's burdened with kids, somebody who's burdened with work, somebody who's burdened with a physical ailment, or that has gotten tripped up in life. You carry one another's burdens as you can. And so, as Jesus followers, our marching orders is the law of Christ, to go out and Jesus people. Well, to go out and Jesus one another. And this, the law of Christ, should inform over time our conscience. So the law of Christ and our informed conscience. This informed conscience should begin to be hardwired into the law of Christ. So our conscience should become natural for us to emanate the love of Christ to the world and to our community around us. And not just us personally, but our collective conscience. And so when something happens, we should be collectively irritated, disturbed, and convicted to action. We should be disturbed and irritated when we see injustice, disturbed and irritated and convicted when we accidentally disrespect somebody or accidentally don't give them what they deserve. When we see people undermining their own future, undermining their health, their relationship with their kids, undermining the integrity of their family and the integrity of the society, we should be moved by that. It should bother us because of the law of Christ. Our collective conscience, the thing that moves us to action, is tied to the idea that you are to love people, respect other people, recognize the dignity of other people, the way Christ said that I did for you, that I left heaven for you, and I am not afraid of guilt by association. The reality is, if Jesus was afraid of guilt by association, he would have stayed in heaven. He wouldn't have come down to bear himself to love us. And now he's saying, take your cue from me. So the law of Christ informs our collective conscience. There are a couple examples I want to give you from history about the law of Christ. Taking a very powerful example on creating and shaping Western culture. So there was once a time in culture, in Western culture, where it was just self-evident that people would be owned and controlled by other people. Like, it was just evident. It had nothing to do with your race, your history. Like, you could be owned by your next door neighbor. And it was just evident that that was what took place. And in the 4th century BC, Aristotle, a Greek philosopher whose responsibility was to make sense of the world, the philosophers took everything that was going on out there and they brought it all together and say, okay, why does this make sense? Like, why this is, how does it all work and how can we explain it to people? He says, for that some should rule and others be ruled is a thing not only necessary, it is expedient. I had to look up expedient, and I'm not sure that this is a word that the exact definition that would be his, but it said convenient and practical, although possibly improper and immoral. It's convenient and practical and necessary that some people be owned and ruled. He's talking about slavery. And this was the way it was. From the hour of their birth, some were marked for subjugation and others for rule. The idea of slavery not existing was like saying that the sun wasn't going to come up. And it wasn't until later, the 4th century AD, that we have quotes of, in the Roman Empire, St. Augustine, a 4th century Christian bishop, said, slavery is the result of sin. So before even Augustine said this, like, there were people who began to question slavery and like, what is this? And as the 4th century Christians began having misgivings about the discrepancy in scriptures and realized that people are made in the image of God, and when we, loving as Christ loved us, we begin to sense the horror of slavery. And as time went on, and so we realized the horrors of what slavery was and recognized that the conscience of the Christians is what began that talk and began that wheel turning of saying, no, we're all ain't made in the image of God. We are not to be over our brothers and sisters in that sense. So when the law of Christ informs an individual conscience or a community or a nation's conscience, things change. The values of Christ don't have a shelf life. They are here forever, and they will never fade. This is why it is highly important not to be divided over issues that, like, don't forsake a relationship because of the issues. Because those issues are going to fade, or they're not going to be the greater importance in the long run. So moving on, the third part of the template is the law of Christ informs our conscience. And to an informed conscience, we are to incorporate knowledge and wisdom. So humanity is special in this, that we have built knowledge over the years, that writing has allowed us to know what generations and generations and generations before us have gathered from the knowledge of the stars, the knowledge of the earth, the knowledge of our bodies, to the knowledge of how we interact. Writing has allowed us to gift every generation next with everything that we have learned. And so every generation is smarter than the generation before, consequently, or at least has more knowledge and has built on that knowledge. So for us to live out the kingdom ethic, we should add to our informed conscience the knowledge of science, the knowledge of psychology, the wisdom that comes with understanding how the world works, and understanding how we're made. All of this works together to help us decide where we stand in our political views. To give you an idea as far as like building on knowledge, Christ accommodates us based on our capacity. So give an example of that. It's like, Kelly, if I were to come to you and say, where do babies come from? You would look at me like you just did, and you would laugh at me. I'm 31 years old. Like, if I don't know where babies come from, you probably wouldn't have let me marry your daughter. But if a four-year-old would come to you and ask you, hey, where do babies come from? You would take into account where they're at in life. You would accommodate their knowledge, and you would then impart to them wisdom and understanding, and that would accommodate their knowledge and their place in life. So too, God has accommodated us through the years. As we begin to understand the world, understand and study the world around us, God can accommodate that knowledge and give us more and more information about him, love him, or let him love us through what we know. So in the early days, as God accommodated the capacity of an ancient pre-science, pre-Tylenol, never took a warm shower group of people. And as they continued to learn about God and learn about the world, how he portrayed himself, how he showed himself through the world changed, because he's accommodating to what our knowledge base is. Now, with that said, and this could be a tension point here. As Christians, we should be on the forefront of never resisting science, of being involved in the discovery of the world, discovery of new things, because God can speak to us through that. And also because our faith is not tethered to the interpretation of the text. Our faith is tethered to an event, the resurrection of Jesus. And so because of the resurrection of Jesus, we do not need to fear. We do not need to be afraid of any new discovery or science. That's one reason why I'm super excited about David and Larissa's small group, Faith and Science, on Tuesday nights. As Anya said earlier, David is super smart in science realm, and he's also a very committed follower of Christ, and it's exciting to hear him talk. I have the brain of understanding and being fascinated by it, but I don't grasp it the way that he does, and he does a great job. So check that out, please. So we should incorporate our informed conscience with the knowledge and the wisdom that comes with the age that has been given to us and handed down to us from the people before us. So the law of Christ, an informed conscience, knowledge and wisdom. Now, when it comes to policy, platform, and legislation, there will always be disagreement between Christians. So those first three things, the law of Christ, the informed conscience, and the knowledge of wisdom, at that moment is where our disagreement begins. Because where we sit determines where we stand. So we have all these platform, policy, and legislation that we choose to go after. That we say, this is the right policy, or this is the right legislation that we need to pursue. But where we sit determines where we stand. Meaning, in where we sit, our cultural involvement, our cultural upbringing, determines the perspective in which we view life. So where you live, how much money you have, who you're related to, whether you're educated, if you're educated, determines how you decide to vote, determines what views you choose to stand on. And this is why most of us don't see a conflict between our faith and our politics. Because we're not seeing what somebody else sees or from their perspective. And it's also why you're hearing this and you're saying there's somebody else who needs to hear this message. The reality is our political views are not shaped in a vacuum. And recognizing this and pausing long enough to incorporate this into our thinking is what it means to be mature. And we need a little bit more maturity in our lives today. I hope you agree with me with that. Because our nation, I'll leave it there. So there's always going to be disagreement on policy, platform, and legislation. And that's okay as long as we are mature enough not to allow it to divide us. If we're mature enough not to allow it to divide us, we will be better for the conversation. It's a step toward political unity, and it's a step toward unity in spite of political diversity. So political views and values are shaped by a variety of things, and most of which we had no control over. And I mentioned those earlier. Where we live, where we are raised, where we were educated, if we were educated, what we've been told, what we've seen, what we've experienced, what we've seen others experience. Because where we stand depends on where we sit. And recognizing this is it allows us to open our hands, open our minds, open our hearts without changing our political viewpoint. Disagreement will happen. I'm not saying that we change our views, because politics is a debate, and both sides have a part of the kingdom. Each side agrees a little bit with Jesus. Be aware of where you start on the road. Be aware of where you are sitting in the culture. And then allow yourself to understand where somebody else is sitting, and maybe be open to changing your mind on an issue, though that may not be necessary. That's not the goal. It's an unintended consequence if it happens. So putting it all together, here's what it looks like. Again, the law of Christ informs our conscience. Adding together the knowledge and wisdom that we have gathered through generations and generations before us, we view policy, platform, and legislation based on all that we know. So So with that in mind, this week the challenge is to listen, to learn, and to Jesus somebody. To listen, to learn, to love. Listen to people who don't experience the world that you the way you do. Not just the haves and have-nots, the Christians and the not-Christians, the young and old, the black and white, the gay, the straight, the married, the single, the new citizens, the old citizens, people who've been in military, and people who despise the military. Be willing to listen and understand where those people are coming from. And then learn something when you're listening. This is a big one, because we can listen all day long, and in you, in your one ear, out the other ear. Like, I'm good at doing that sometimes. If I'm got a lot on my plate, and I'm thinking about spacing off, and I'm still looking at you, but and so actively listen and learn. Don't fear any new views that come at you, because again, and your faith is should not be tethered to how the text is interpreted. It is tethered to the event that Jesus came and loved us, that he loved us so much that he gave his life for us and saved us, and he died and rose again, and that he lives today. Pay attention to the frontiers of your ignorance. It's a quote from an atheist, actually, Sam Harris. Be curious. Pay attention to the frontiers of your ignorance. So there are blind spaces that we need to look behind and like approach, pay attention to them. If we don't listen to each other and learn from each other, we will discount anything that doesn't fit perfectly with our flawed view. If we don't listen to each other and learn from each other, we will discount anything that doesn't fit perfectly within our flawed worldview. If you're a Republican, remember that your Democratic brothers and sisters are just like you. And if you're a Democrat, remember that your Republican brothers and sisters are just like you. They're just taking a stand based on where they sit. And finally, love. Please, and I can't stress this enough. This is hit hard all week. And please never, ever burn a bridge. Never burn a bridge over political views. Because as I said before, policies change. People change. Platforms come and platforms go. There are parties that were once that are never more. And there will be parties that come and go. But the love of Christ remains forever. The you beside you is more precious to God than your politically flawed view. The view that 10 years from now could change and probably has changed in the past 10 years. It's different than it was 10 years ago. So why burn a bridge today that the issue that you burn it today isn't going to exist 10 years from now? So if you are truly a Jesus follower, how dare you burn a bridge over a political view? And you may ask, do you really think that this is going to make a difference? Now, this is a direct quote from Andy Stanley's message, but he says, just remember this. Once upon a time, there were a handful of Jesus followers crushed between an empire and the temple. They gave to Caesar what was Caesar's, and they gave to God what was God's, their lives. And now the empire is no more, the temple is no more. Rome's most famous emperor is nothing but a footnote in history, in the story of Jesus of Nazareth. Kingdoms come, kingdoms go, empires rise, empires fall. Jesus said, I'm going to build my ecclesia, my church, and nothing is ever going to stop it. And he did. And we've been invited to be a part of it. And it is still the way forward. And our responsibility, especially in the season like this, is to show our divided nation, that our divided world, what it looks like. And that it's even possible to disagree politically, love unconditionally, while we pray for unity. Because at Calvary, at Calvary and the cross, we lost our right to do anything less than that. So listen, learn, and love. I'm going to go into communion now. The very place that Christ gave the message, gave his law, his command, he said, and you are to love each other as I have loved you. He took the bread and he said, this is my body that was broken for you. Take it and remember, rinse of me. And then at another point, he lifted the glass and he said, this is my blood that was poured for you. Take it in remembrance of me. Now, God, as we remember that sacrifice, that love, that amazing, reckless love, that you left everything in heaven to show us love. You left everything in heaven to come and Jesus us, that we may in turn Jesus one another. Help us right now in the next few minutes to reflect into that.